Cut the music.
I think I got my swagger back.
Spectacular group of men. You go find them, you throw your arms around them, you give them a big kiss on the mouth if you're a girl.
All the band is out on the field. He's going to go into the end zone.
There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Like poison. Like rat poison. Are you going to listen to me or are you going to listen to these guys?
And welcome to the College Football Country Podcast. We are back. 2019 season is about to get underway. So thrilled to be ready to talk some football. Today, I am going to have Mark Ennis join me. Mark Ennis from Louisville, 93.9, 3 to 6 o'clock in the afternoons. Also, cardinalsports.com. Tremendous follow on Twitter at Mark Ennis. He's going to join me. We're going to do 10 dumb questions to get ready for college football. I wanted to come up with 10 smart, creative, unique questions, something that might make you think a little bit. And then I said, screw it. Let's just ask the dumbest questions there are because, quite honestly, those usually get the smartest answers. So Mark Ennis will join me for 10 dumb questions. Thank you guys so much for subscribing, for downloading. Make sure to tell your friends about College Football Country. Now that we're back in season, let your friends know. If you want to talk college football every single week, you want to get the best analysis, the most fun, entertaining insight into college football, it's right here. It's right here on College Football Country. We love to talk ball. We'll have some great guests throughout the season. Right now, the plan is to do 2 episodes a week. I'm going to try to have one on Monday mornings ready for you guys, maybe even Sunday night, and then also one going into Friday, get you guys all your gambling fix ahead of the weekend. A cool announcement for you really quickly in the meantime. A lot of you guys out there listening know I host a midday show in Charlotte, 10 to 2 on WFNZ. Also this year, I will be hosting my own show from 6 to 7. So 6 to 7 at night, right here in Charlotte, I'll be hosting Final Drive. So it'll be the Final Drive with Josh Parcell, Tuesdays through Fridays. Be off on Mondays. Panther Talk will be on Mondays. But Tuesday through Friday, I'll be hosting the Final Drive. We're going to talk NFL. We're going to talk college football as well. So if you enjoy College Football Country, highly recommend going and checking out Final Drive. It'll be available on radio.com. It'll also be available on demand as a podcast every single night for you guys. We'll have great guests from around the world of the NFL, from around the world of college football. I'm very excited for that show. I really appreciate you guys listening. Couldn't do this without you guys out there who have supported the podcast, who have supported me on Twitter, through the radio. It's been awesome. So really, really pumped to get started. That is going to debut in about a week and a half. It's going to be Tuesday, September 3rd. It'll be right after college football gets started. The first week of college football will be in the books, and then we'll be ready to talk week one of the NFL. So I know we love the college football around here. I'm excited to keep talking college football all year long. Hopefully the College Football Country podcast not going anywhere. I'll at least try to get you one a week, but hoping to do 2 a week Monday and Friday during the season. But Final Drive, Tuesdays through Fridays. We're going to knock that out for you guys. You always have your college football fix. And make sure, last thing, make sure you send in your random college football names. That was a hit last year. That was tremendous. I got some great ones last year from you guys. I want more. Who is the most obscure college football player you could think of? Drop it in the reviews. Leave a 5-star rating. It helps me out. Have a little bit of fun in the process. And we'll try to come up with another prize for you guys this year. A little reward for dropping in that review. Really hope you guys make sure to subscribe and review. And now welcome on Mark Ennis from 93.9 in Louisville. They're on from 3 to 6 in the afternoon every weekday. And now the proud owner of cardinalsports.com. He's a legend in Louisville. Mark Ennis, how you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty well. It's good to talk to you again, man.
Hey, who's a bigger deal in Louisville right now, you or Scott Satterfield?
It's Scott Satterfield, but he starts losing, right? He's got me. He's got me beat by a lot. And then I'll get to roast him if they start losing a whole lot of games.
You guys are going to have an interesting ride over the next few seasons. Obviously, a big rebuild ahead of you. But we're going to talk big picture here at college football today. 10 dumb questions. All right. Sometimes I like to be creative. I try to like to think outside the box. And then I thought to myself, why am I doing this? Let's just ask the 10 easiest questions, the ones that everybody wants to know as we get into college football, as it gets started really this weekend with Miami, Florida. But obviously, you know, we're about a week and a half away from everything getting underway. So, Mark, we're just going to start here with number one. Number one dumbest question in college football. Will Clemson and Alabama play again?
Yes. And I think you can do whatever mental gymnastics that you want to do to try to come up with some other matchup or some compelling reason. The only way that they don't play each other for the title again is if somehow they play each other in the semifinals. Like, I can't think of a compelling reason. I mean, whenever we project forward from the year before, it's almost always like, all right, who has the same coach and who has the same quarterback and who has the same just sort of general core from the year before that we can sort of project them forward? And nobody's got better of all of those things than the two teams who just played. So to me, I can't come up with a good enough reason to really believe in anybody else that's going to knock any of those guys off. Not Ohio State, not Georgia, not Oklahoma, not somebody else. To me, I can't come up with a reason. And you bring them both back with quarterbacks that they like and receivers that they like, they seem farther away than usual.
You know, I think the one caveat I'd have with both teams, I mean, the obvious one is injuries, but with Alabama specifically, you know, last year Tua was limping to the finish line. And if something similar were to happen this season, they don't have that security blanket that they had last year with Jalen Hurts. So, you know, you think about last season, him coming in, saving the day against Georgia. If they were in a similar spot, and it may not be the SEC title game, maybe it's against LSU, maybe it's against Auburn, I don't know. But if Tua gets banged up at some point, they don't have a guy to fall back on that was the SEC player of the year at quarterback. So that gives me a slight amount of pause with Alabama, but obviously you can never, you know, predict injuries. On the other side with Clemson, I want to quickly get kind of your thoughts on this, because the schedule could not be pretty much any easier. A&M and Syracuse, two toughest games out of the gate, and then it's smooth sailing the rest of the way. However, I can't get out of my head the fact that three times in the last 11 years or so, we've had teams return their quarterback off a national championship, return a lot of starters as well, and none of them made it back to the national championship game again. Florida in 2009, remember Tebow's senior year, came back. They lose in the SEC championship game. Don't make it. They end up playing Cincinnati in the Sugar Bowl, I believe, that year. Then you have Florida State, wins it all in 2013. They come back the next season. Now they get to the playoff. They looked pretty bad all season long. I didn't even think they belonged in the playoff. They get blown out by Oregon. And then the next year, Ohio State, which returned everybody, including three quarterbacks, they don't make it back. They lose to Michigan State, and they don't even make it to the Big Ten title game. All three of those teams seemed like just write them in. They're done. Like, they are in the national championship game again, and none of them made it there. It's kind of hard. There's not a Michigan State or an Alabama and Clemson's conference, so maybe that's why I give them pause. But I'm curious, do you think that kind of like complacency or the pressure on Clemson could catch up to them?
Yeah, you know, I think that that's smart. Like, I think, but that's the sort of thing we have to go and mentally, like, try and go and find a reason for them to not be there. Like, there's no obvious football reason. And Clemson does a really nice job, in my mind at least, like, fighting this sort of complacency thing by how much they intentionally play everybody, like, all the time. They really don't even lose, quote-unquote, returning starters. Like, they play 80, 90, 100 guys, and they beat the hell out of Louisville last year. They played over 100 guys in that game. So they have some kind of good internal systems for fighting that sort of thing. And I think the most important thing is, like you mentioned, the teams that knocked off the teams you just talked about, that Michigan State team, they made the playoff. Right. The Alabama team, they won the national championship. That Oregon team played for the championship and had a Heisman Trophy winner. There's just nothing like that on Clemson's schedule at all.
Yep, exactly. So that it's hard for me to go against Clemson at this point. I mean, I think you go ahead and ride them in. I get it. All right, well, kind of off of that, number two dumbest question, will Trevor Lawrence win the Heisman?
I'll say no, and I will use a very local example to tell you why. And it flows right out of the answer from the previous question. He won't win the Heisman because he's not going to get to play enough.
Yep.
And I think that their schedule is so easy, and he's so good that he will. Lamar Jackson kind of went through this just a little bit his first year, where he didn't even play the second halves of games, and so there aren't going to be gaudy stats. And what Trevor Lawrence could really use to ensure that he'll have gaudy stats on top of being the best quarterback on the best team. Is somebody that could play back at them, especially offensively, get them in some shootouts, make him have to make some clutch plays. And outside, like you said, of the A&M game and maybe the Syracuse game early in the year, and I'm still not totally sold on that Syracuse team just yet. There's nobody. And go back to the Louisville game a year ago. They scored 77 points. 77. And he only threw the ball 12 times. You know, and that could happen on their schedule multiple times, and he's not going to win the Heisman if that's the case.
Is there somebody that you do like right now?
I mean, I would think Alabama with Tua. We've got something to prove.
Yep.
They got the best wide receiving core maybe ever in that group, and they do have a schedule that's going to at least be difficult enough for him to be in games. in the second half and in the fourth quarter, maybe even need to make a couple throws. And he's got something to prove, you know, from a year ago. I'm sure he's got that Peyton Manning, I got robbed thing from 1998. And he's going to let people know, or 97, he's going to let people know about it.
Yeah, you and I are on the exact same page. I just, not only will he have something to prove, I think there's going to be a little bit of voter's remorse, if you will. Because there's still a lot of people out there who thought he should have won it a year ago. He got it stolen from him kind of at the last minute by Kyler Murray. You come back this season, I think there's going to be some voters who, when you get to the end, if those two guys have similar numbers, which they probably will, I think people will say, "All right, listen, Lawrence is going to have to come back another year. He'll get his as a junior. We've got to give it to Tua now. He deserved it last season." I think that's going to play into it. And plus, like you said, the last month of the season, Tua is playing against LSU, Mississippi State, and Auburn. Trevor Lawrence is playing against NC State, Wake Forest, and who knows how South Carolina is going to look by that time. They may be a 5-6 team. So I'm with you. I think Trevor Lawrence, probably the best player in the country, definitely the best player in the country in my eyes, not going to win the Heisman Trophy. Number three, dumbest question, Mark, is Texas back?
I'm just going to say no until they are. Like, I just, like, without even being utterly rational, I feel like, you know what we did? We did this with Florida State for about a decade. And we basically were just like, no, they're not back. Until finally in 2013, they actually were back, right? And so that's what I'm going to do. And I'm actually like a huge Tom Herman guy. I think that he's a great coach. I think he's perfect for what they hired him. I think the stat, Josh, with Texas is that over the last 30 years, they finished unranked as often as they finished ranked.
Wow.
Like I think that that's true, or it's close to true. Maybe the 30 years part isn't right, but it's something like that. Like, don't you think there's something weird about Texas? And here's what I mean about it. You figure that they should have a lot more to show for just what they have as an institution, the advantages that they have. And they don't. And my theory has always been with them that because it's so easy, everyone's crazy. They have crazy oil money. Everyone's crazy for football. They have oil money. There's players everywhere. You know, within 100 miles of wherever they are, like, it's easy for them that they can't ever get desperate to be good. And so I'm not convinced that they've reached that point yet. So I'm just going to say no, they're not back, and we might feel that way as soon as that LSU game are on the season.
Yeah, and here's the thing about Texas and Tom Herman. Love Tom Herman, like you said. They're great as an underdog. They're great when they have something to prove. That goes back to when Herman was at Houston, even Ohio State. He's been great as a dog. When they're favored, when they're kind of the team that is being targeted as opposed to targeting someone else, they're not as dominant of a football team. I mean, yes, everybody remembers the Georgia game. Everybody remembers them knocking off Oklahoma last year and really going toe-to-toe with Oklahoma the second time in the Big 12 title game. They also barely escaped Kansas the last game of the regular season. And Texas Tech a couple weeks before that. So this team, Herman just has this tendency to play down to his opponents or play up to his opponents. And, you know, this season, like LSU, I think Texas has a chance in that game. I mean, I think they went from a dog. They're now slightly favored. But that's a toss-up game. Everybody is, you know, going to have their eye on that game. But I'm more concerned with, you know, how do they look against West Virginia on the road on October 5th or TCU on the road later that month? Like, the teams that are kind of middle of the road but good enough to beat you if you don't show up. I feel like we're going to see a game or two this year where Texas gets caught up. And to me, the answer to the question is Texas back would be no, because if Texas is back, that means they're playing for the playoff and the national championship. I'm not there yet with them.
I'm with you on that. And I'll also add, I think every year there's a team that we overrate, not to steal a question from you later, because of the way their bowl game went in the season, and there's really nothing more artificial or less likely to me to carry over to the next year than how well you played in a bowl game that kind of didn't matter to the other team, and I think Texas had that.
Could not agree more. So number four, a guy who he didn't even play in a bowl game last year, Clay Helton. Is he? I mean, this might be the dumbest question of all 10. This might be the dumbest. Is Clay Helton on the hot seat?
I mean, yes. If he's not on the hot seat, there is no hot seat. They are the most resource-laden program in the Pac-12, which, by the way, sucks. And then at the same time, I mean, the Pac-12 sucks. USC shouldn't suck. They kind of do. But at the same time, there are multiple programs in the Pac-12 that are kind of shoestringing themselves into some real, like, national merit. Washington State and Washington and Oregon, I don't know if it's fair to say Oregon's shoestring in it, but they're building things and they're doing it organically and it's sustainable and they're good. And meanwhile, USC is just sort of wandering around, kind of squandering all that they have to offer as a program. And the thing is out there that I think would sort of be the boogeyman for literally any coach at a resource-laden program who is underachieving. What is that thing? Urban Meyer, right? Urban Meyer doesn't have a job. USC is out there underachieving, and I would be terrified if I was Clay Helton anyway. But the fact that Urban Meyer is just out there for the taking at a place where he could come in right away and crush again if he wanted to one more time, yeah, he's on the hot seat.
Yeah, it would seem that way. You know, and if Urban Meyer, for some reason, doesn't take the job, which at this point it feels like is going to happen, you know, Dino Babers makes a lot of sense, a guy who's a West Coast guy. I would love to see him out there. The one point I'll make about USC, because it's obvious Helton's on the hot seat, that's just kind of fascinating to me. You know, USC, Texas, who we just talked about, Miami, three programs that have basically been dormant for the last decade, haven't been nationally relevant, nationally dominant. Texas and Miami, what's been kind of the common denominator with their slide? Quarterback play. Haven't had great quarterbacks. That's been an issue. Yep. That hasn't been an issue at USC. They had Cody Kessler. They had Sam Darnold. They had Matt Barkley. Like, they've got NFL quarterbacks going back for a decade, and they've still struggled. It's kind of fun. Now, it's also funny to say they struggled because they did win a Rose Bowl a couple years ago. Like, they've been a little better, I think, than Miami and Texas have been, even though it might look poor right now. But it is interesting to me. Like, usually the quarterbacks kind of, they'll be the ones that define whether or not you're a national powerhouse. USC hasn't struggled in that department. It's basically everywhere else, and, you know, from an institutional standpoint, where they've had issues. So, yeah, I'm with you. I mean, Clay Helton, I don't know that there's a record you could put on him where he would keep his job going into next season. I think with Urban Meyer looming out there, it makes too much sense. All right, almost halfway here. Can Jalen Hurts is number five. Can Jalen Hurts do what Baker and Kyler couldn't? They won the Heisman, but they didn't win a national title. I mean, what chance do you give Oklahoma of cracking through and maybe shocking everyone and actually winning it all?
Not very much, just because you're going to have to make the throws that Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray could make. And I'll be honest with you, I don't think he can't throw like the two Heisman Trophy winning number one overall quarterbacks in the NFL draft. Like, that's just not going to happen for Oklahoma by plugging Jalen Hurts in there. Now, I think he's a really level-headed kid, and he has sort of that even keel that you want in a quarterback. He's mature. He's played in a lot of big-time games. And he personally is stepping into a situation where he's going to have a tremendous, really creative running game around him. I think he'll look better as a passer and as sort of the one that makes that offense go than he has in the past, even at Alabama. But he's not one of those two guys. And in order for them to beat Texas multiple times and one or both of those teams, perhaps Clemson, Alabama, in the playoff, like, he's going to have to make throws we've never seen him make. And let's just face it, like, there is a reason that he got benched at Alabama, and it's because he's not Tua. He's not Baker Mayfield. He's not Kyler Murray. I wouldn't even be shocked if he doesn't finish the season as the starter at Oklahoma this year. But they'll work with him as kind of a distributor as they bring, you know, these young guys along. And, again, I wouldn't be shocked if, no, he's not. He doesn't, you know, take them all the way and that sort of thing. I wouldn't even be shocked if he lost his job at some point this year.
Wow. That's interesting to me, because I agree with you. Not the passer. You're right. That's why he lost the job at Alabama. He's going into a conference that's nowhere near the same level as the SEC is defensively. So it's going to have he's going to have an easier time making those throws. He's also working with the best offensive mind in college football, period. I do think that Lincoln Riley, the one thing he is great at doing is putting guys in position to succeed. He gives them an opportunity to accentuate their strengths. He did that with Baker. He did that with Kyler. Those two guys are different players. Their offense did look slightly different. Now, Jalen Hurts is a departure from either one of those guys. I get it. But Oklahoma can run the football, like you said. I think they might have three 1,000-yard rushers. If he doesn't lose his job, like you think, they could have three guys that pick up 1,000 yards on the ground, which is insane to think about. And I remember the Georgia game a couple years ago, because this is what this ultimately comes down to, right? Can they beat Alabama, Clemson, or Georgia? They're going to have to go through two of those three to win a championship, you would think. You know, they went toe-to-toe with Georgia a couple years ago, and Rodney Anderson ran for 200 yards. Now, Baker didn't pick up anything on the ground, but they ran the ball 45 times in that game. threw it 36 times. So there was some balance there. They didn't just have to rely on Baker Mayfield to win the game with his arm. And quite honestly, it wasn't a vintage Baker game from a passing standpoint. They won that game because, or competed in that game rather, because they ran the ball so well. They've shown they can do it against a great Georgia defense. Can they get back and do that again would be the question. I'm with you. I think that Clemson, Alabama are clearly 1-2. I do think Oklahoma is every bit as good as Georgia at 3. I'm buying into Alex Grinch as a defensive coordinator. What he did at Washington State was tremendous. This is a really similar setup for him, coming in and having to manage a morbid defense that plays with a fast-paced offense. I'm going to buy in on Oklahoma. I do think they get through the Big 12. We just talked about why we're not sold on Texas, so I'm on Oklahoma to get through that conference. And I don't know. I like them. If they get the right matchup in that semifinal game, I think they can at least get to the championship. But anyway, we're going to move on. So number six, dumbest question. Is this finally Michigan's year?
I'm going to say no. And just because there's something, how we talked about Tom Herman and his teams can't handle when they are the favorite. There's something about Jim Harbaugh that I think it's kind of the same way. There's something concerning about a guy who is so amped that they can be as good as they have been historically and statistically, just outstanding as a defensive team and that sort of thing, and then just get boat raced the way that they do against Ohio State, the biggest game, the most meaningful game. Jim Harbaugh is one of those guys. I've watch this up close with Rick Pitino and Cal at Kentucky, where Rick would go beyond, in Spaceballs, where they go into plaid. that's what Rick does with just the occasional game against Calipari. He goes past where he's at his best, and it becomes this sort of hyper tense thing. And to me, it's just not. I don't believe Harbaugh will stop doing that this year, and that there's going to be a game, if not two. Where he goes beyond that thing into where the thing that makes him good then becomes the thing that gets translated to the team and they become too much of something in a game and they lose. And I think Ryan Day's kind of the real deal, and I love what they're going to do at Ohio State and Justin Fields is ready. I just wouldn't be surprised if they lost that game again. So, no, I don't think it is.
So here's the thing with Michigan. You go back, look at the teams that they've lost to just in the last two seasons. They lost to Penn State, who won 11 games. Wisconsin went 13-1. Ohio State won 12 games, and then they lost the bowl game. South Carolina was 9-4. But regular season games, all double-digit win teams in 2017. Last year, they lose to Notre Dame, who went 12-1, and they lost to Ohio State, who went 13-1, and then they got blown out in the bowl game by Florida. But again, like we said earlier, kind of hard to read much into that game, especially with all the guys they had sitting out. So to me, Michigan, they just need to break through that last kind of level. They just need to be able to compete and beat the best teams. They're doing a good job of beating the teams they should beat. Now they just got to go beat the teams that separate you from good and great. And if you look at the schedule this year, Mark, I'm very excited. I'm looking at October 19th in Happy Valley. I think you're looking at two undefeated teams going into that game. You look at the schedule for Michigan and Penn State early in the year. Neither one of them is going to be really tested. Michigan has to go on the road to Wisconsin. They get Iowa at home. But you would think, again, back to the point, they take care of the games they should take care of. They're going to be unbeaten. Penn State's schedule is cake. They go on the road against Iowa the week before, but very real chance that Penn State is 6-0 and Michigan 6-0 going into that midseason game. That could decide the Big Ten East. I know Ohio State's out there too, but I really like Penn State. I love Clifford, the quarterback at Penn State. I think they're being a little bit underrated right now. That game could be the defining game of the season in the Big Ten. I'll say Penn State actually comes out of that because they're going to be at home in Happy Valley, like I said. So, no, I don't think this is Michigan's year. I think that game is going to be the swing one in the Big Ten race. Number seven, Mark, what is the non-conference game of the year? Which one are you most pumped about here coming up in a few weeks?
I think it's week three. I get confused with week zeros now, but week three, you get Notre Dame at Georgia. Yeah. That came a couple of years ago. Was revolutionary. I say this on the radio all the time. To me, Georgia playing at Notre Dame and Georgia fans flocking up there and taking over a third of the stadium is what gave all of the major powerful ADs this itch to start scheduling quality non-conference home and home, because that game was a spectacle. It was a great game, and that experience was a kind of just revolutionary for fans. And I'm very much looking forward to this again because it was such a good game. and Notre Dame doesn't have a terribly difficult schedule this year, it's basically going to be their game to have a chance to stay in the playoff chase this year. And I'm with you that Georgia is probably a year away from being just kind of a total juggernaut, but they're a year away. They have some issues. Notre Dame brings back a quarterback that's a lot more productive than they had in that game. They've got a tremendously good offensive line. And they're going to be very, very good on defense again this year. I think that's going to be a fantastic, low-scoring, tense, tremendous environment for a game. And I don't know that we'll get a better non-conference game than that one early in the season.
And Notre Dame's got to prove it. I mean, they've got to prove that it's similar to Michigan. Like, you've got to beat one of the big dogs. I mean, I think that Alabama game from 7 years ago still sticks out in a lot of people's minds at just how wide the gap is between, you know, the best of the best in the SEC and Notre Dame. Of course, we saw what happened last year against Clemson. Can they go on the road? That's the thing. If this game was in South Bend, remember, I believe that was Jake Fromm's first start game a couple years ago in South Bend. He played most of the week before, but that was, I believe, his first start. It was his first road start, if not his first one overall. And Georgia still, it barely escapes, whatever. Now they got to go into Athens with Fromm, 2 years under his belt, a lot of big games. I think Georgia actually wins that game by double digits, but I'm with you that I think that that is maybe the most marquee game of the regular season, and certainly one with the biggest playoff implications. I'm going to say LSU-Texas. I was tempted to say Auburn-Oregon. I'm actually really interested to see what happens in that game. If Oregon can win that game, I think the Ducks are a sleeper to make it to the playoff. But LSU-Texas, same kind of thing. I think one of those teams will – I'm nervous that that could become the Texas-Notre Dame of a few years ago, where it becomes this epic game and then both teams end up going like 8-4. It screams that kind of situation. But LSU, new offense, Joe Burrow, is this final of the year where they actually open it up? I hear that, I feel like, every August, and it never happens. So LSU with a new offense going into Texas, I like the Tigers in that game.
And that Auburn Washington game that you mentioned, or Auburn Oregon, like that. If Gus Malzahn loses that game early in the year and already has like a marquee non conference loss before they even get into SEC play in a year where they draw Florida from the other division, like, it will be a full season of hot seat talk for Gus Malzahn.
Yeah, he won't be able to avoid it. I mean, you know, they get Tulane and Kent State the next couple weeks, and then it's A&M, Mississippi State, Florida, three straight right there. I mean, if Auburn is 3-3 or 4-2 with, I mean, seemingly no shot at you know, winning the SEC West again, I mean, yeah, he'll be in trouble. I'd be curious, real quick, we'll take 60 seconds here. If Malzahn were to be let go, who is a guy that makes sense there? I don't know that there's an obvious one that jumps to mind, but is there anybody that you think would make sense if they were to actually move on from Gus?
If they could put the money together, I think Jeff Brohm would be amazing at Auburn.
Yeah.
So, like, that's the guy I would go for, and I think it's the kind of job that he would kill for. And, man, if he did anything like he's done at Purdue and really in his career period, it would make the SEC West just even more absurd than usual.
Yeah, man, if somebody's finally going to pull Brohm away. I know that's a sore subject for you guys. I think that was the last time we talked. We thought it was going to happen. But, I mean, if somebody's going to pull him away from Purdue before long, Auburn might be the one to do it. Number 8, dumbest question in college football. Can Mack Brown turn around North Carolina?
I think he can, and I will just admit that I've been up to this point, or my initial reaction to his hiring was wrong. I just thought this was just kind of a weird, like, what was that movie, Space Cowboys or whatever, get all the old guys to go be astronauts one more time. Like, that's what it felt like. But I think Mack Brown's more self-aware than I'll give him credit for. And in particular, has realized, hey, I can be the head coach, but I can be basically kind of the CEO model, and I really think he's assembled quite a staff there. They are recruiting extremely well. And you know this. Coastal sucks.
Yeah.
It sucks.
Yeah.
Like, it just won't take a lot for them to have as much or more talent than virtually everybody else they play in terms of conference play in the Coastal. And if Mack is going to, you know, not meddle and be a CEO, be a senator, be a motivator, be a coach and dad, be the living room closer, all these things that you and I both know he's extremely good at, again, it just won't take much for them to line up most Saturdays with better players than most of the teams that they play. So So I think it's going to work. I really do.
I'm still out. I got to see it happen. I got to see it on the field. I'm with you, though. I mean, the results, the early returns in the offseason, better than we expected. But at the same time, I never really doubted that Mac was going to bring in more talent than Fedora would. Fedora burned a million bridges in the state of North Carolina. That was a big, you know, that was a big problem with the boosters in Carolina. They didn't like the way Fedora was running the program. So Mac comes in. Mac is the anti-Fedora. He comes in. Yeah. Everybody loves him. He's rebuilt all these connections in the state. That's great. And you're right. They are going to have more talent than probably anybody in the division outside of Miami. And yeah, they're going to be more competitive. Totally get it. I like Longo, the offensive coordinator. They've done a really good job at hiring a staff. I've still just got to see it on the field. I want to know, because this is a long-term thing, but I do want to know, is the atmosphere as positive and as hopeful and optimistic if Carolina goes 4-8? Or even if they could be 0-5 to start the season. And that's not an indictment on Carolina. That's their schedule. They open with South Carolina. I think that's a loss. They also have Miami the next week, probably a loss. Then you're talking about App State, Wake, and Clemson in the next three games. App is legit. Wake is legit. And then you've got Clemson. I mean, there's. I think it's more likely than not they have a losing record. I think it's possible they might lose all five with a true freshman quarterback. So I just want to know, can you still sell the same vision? I think Mac believes he can, but it's easier to say that now than after you've lost five in a row. And also, depending on how you lose them, you know, can you still keep that momentum going? Maybe, but I want to see it happen on the field first. And maybe they surprise us all and come out of the gates hot with Sam Howell. Who knows? But number nine. All right, here we go. Last two questions. First, we'll go underrated. Who is the most underrated team, in your opinion, in the country?
Well, it's difficult for me to say, but it might be Oregon, just because we don't pay all that much attention to the Pac-12, and justifiably so, by the way. But you bring back a star quarterback. They don't have a terribly difficult schedule, obviously, playing in the Pac-12. But they do get an opportunity in the non-conference to at least make a little bit of waves. I think they played really, really well last year. I'm a big believer in them. And, again, I just don't think we pay a ton of attention to them. They're really good defensively again this year. They brought in a tremendous recruiting class that will help. I think has a number of guys that can really help immediately. I think we just don't pay enough attention to the Pac-12, and they don't give us reason to. But Oregon, couple weeks into the season, we might be talking about them as kind of a if they run the table team. So to me, I'll go with Oregon.
You took my team. This isn't fair. Oregon was going to be my team. No, I'm with you. I think, again, you know, pointing at that Auburn game, I kind of foreshadowed it earlier, man. Like, if they get past Auburn, that Pac-12 is there for the taking. They got the best quarterback in the conference. All apologies to Jacob Eason, but Justin Herbert, best quarterback in the conference. Mario Cristobal is doing something at Oregon. He's building something now. I'm starting to buy into what I'm hearing from Oregon long term. This could be a breakthrough year for them. I really do believe that. So I like Oregon as well. The other team that I'll just mention, just so we can be different, Iowa. Everybody's talking about Nebraska in the Big Ten West. Everybody. That's like the hot team. Scott Frost, they're going to rebound 4-8. And I'm with them. I love Frost. I think Nebraska was much better than the record indicated a year ago. If it weren't for Martinez going down with an early injury, their season looks a lot different, I think, today. But Iowa, they return, you know, 9 starters, not a lot. But they do bring back Nate Stanley. It feels like it's been like 5 years. It's time for Iowa to go 11-1 again. This happens like once a presidential term, Iowa plays nobody on the schedule. Now that this year, it is a little bit difficult. They play Michigan and Penn State in back-to-back weeks. If they split those two games, there's nothing stopping Iowa from an 11-1 season. The schedule is there for the taking. The Big Ten West ain't great. Northwestern on the road, it's tough. But Iowa could be a sneaky team. I'm not, like, telling you to go bet the house on Iowa to, you know, win the Big Ten or anything. But I just feel like there's a lot of attention being paid to Nebraska and not enough being paid to Iowa. We'll flip it over then, Mark. Number 10, dumbest question in college football. Who's the most overrated team?
And it pains me to say this, but I think it's Florida. And I think that if this is the flip side, or this is kind of what we were hinting at a little bit earlier, where they are the team, in my mind, this year that is the beneficiary of too much credit for what a bowl game means. Right? And look, beating Michigan like they did, they do return Felipe Franks. It's year two in a new system. I'm just not convinced that they took the enormous step forward in year one that people think that they did. And I've been kind of encouraged to see that Andy Staples saying kind of the same thing lately, like telling everybody, hey, chill out. Like, I think that sometimes rebuilds and turnarounds under coaches, there's a two-year process. Like, year one is growing pains. But then year two, a lot of times you'll lose, like, a huge chunk of your roster. And you kind of got to do it again, almost like two first years. I think he's actually going to have that this year, even with Felipe Franks coming back. They've had an odd offseason departures and signees who didn't make it and all that sort of thing. They're a lot less deep than they used to be, even a year ago, at some critical positions. And for as much as they did well, they benefited a year ago. First of all, they lost to Kentucky and ended that streak against Kentucky. They beat a Florida State team that stunk a year ago. And their schedule this year is brutal. And there are opportunities for Florida, unfortunately, to kind of pile up some disappointing losses and really take a lot of air out of what happened a year ago. For me, it's Florida.
Yeah, and, you know, selfishly, as a Virginia Tech fan, everybody's just – the whole story offseason has been, well, what's wrong with Virginia Tech? They're losing guys in the transfer portal. It's like, can we pay attention to Florida right now? Like,
yeah.
They're losing half their team, it feels like, to suspension, arrest, transfer, whatever. Dan Mullen's had a tough offseason. I'm with you there. I do think Florida's probably just a little bit overrated. I'm going to stick in the SEC but go to the other side, A&M. Texas A&M, year two with Jimbo – I get that he's going to have A&M back in the national conversation before long. I just don't think it's this season, and a lot of it does have to do with the schedule. They're one of only two teams in the country, South Carolina being the other one, that has to play the top three teams in America. They have to play Alabama, Clemson, and, of course, Georgia. I think that that's going to be way too tough of a road for them. I wouldn't be surprised if A&M is fighting to make a bowl game by the end of the season. I just think that this team is a year away. They have only one senior projected to start on defense. Now, they do bring back a good amount on offense, but it's same kind of thing before. We remember the positives with certain teams, like we did with Texas, but we ignore some of the other things. Like, this team had a close call last year against South Carolina, who was decent. Kentucky, who was good, they won in overtime, but then lost to Auburn, lost to Mississippi State by double digits, barely got through Arkansas. Now, I get that some of that is first six games under Jimbo Fisher. You know, by the end of the season, they were playing better. They played in that marathon game against LSU. They just survived and won that game. I get that they built some positive momentum towards the end of the season. I think Kellen Mond is good. I don't think he's great. I think the defense is going to struggle, and mostly the schedule. If they were playing in the ACC Coastal, they'd win it. But they're playing in the SEC West, and I think that that's going to lead to a team that's probably 7-5, maybe 8-4, and that's just not a top 10 team to me. I mean, on paper, the talent says top 20, but the schedule says they may not even make the top 25. So I'll say A&M, based on the schedule more so than anything else. That's it, man.
And let me tack one on real quick. They are not overrated, but there is a large contingency of people that are convinced that Florida State is going to make a very, very large bounce back from 5-7 a year ago. And I just want to call my shot that I'm not a believer in that at all. Now, look, I think they'll be a bowl team this year. I think they'll be better than a year ago. But the people who think they're going to bounce back to be a 9, 10, 11 win team this year, I'm just not a believer. I'm a huge skeptic of what they've got at quarterback. And what they've got a quarterback fitting into Kendall Briles' offense. And, by the way, they are now a team running a Briles' offense in year one. And that doesn't always go particularly well.
Yeah.
And they don't have an easy schedule. So, for me, like, it's very easy for me to see them being 6-6 this year.
I don't disagree with that at all. I mean, I've never been a believer in James Blackman. I mean, the guy got thrust into the job, you know, kind of out of nowhere a couple years ago. Wasn't great. And I didn't expect him to be great, but he wasn't great, you know, in a tough spot. He's still weighs, last I checked, like 110 pounds. I mean, I don't know if that guy's going to last.
Did you see David Hale? David Hale tweeted that stat, I don't know, maybe a week or two ago. First and second down, designed runs, total yards before contact for Florida State for the entire season, and it was two.
Wait, total?
Total.
Oh, my God.
Like, not only is Blackman, you and I, something that we're skeptical about, the offensive line has just been rotten, historically rotten. So that's my skepticism right there.
It's one thing to have an average quarterback. You put an average quarterback behind a bad offensive line, it doesn't end well. I'm with you on Florida State. And by the way, I was dead wrong last year. I picked them to win the ACC last year. I thought they were going to come in. I thought they were going to surprise Clemson. And, boy, well, I was in Tallahassee when Virginia Tech kind of ended that dream pretty quickly. So
week one.
Oh, man, yeah. It only got worse from there. So we'll see. Mark, that's going to do it, man. 10 dumb questions, 10 smart answers. You did a great job, man. Appreciate it. Once again, 93.9 in Louisville, 3-6. Cardinalsports.com, so you can go check that out if you're a big Louisville fan. Mark, really love having you on. We'll definitely catch up with you at some point later on down the season.
Sounds good, buddy. Let's do it again.
All right, that's going to do it for this College Football Country podcast. Thanks again to Mark Ennis for joining me. You can follow him on Twitter, at Mark Ennis. I'll be back hopefully a little bit later this week. We're going to get ready for Miami, Florida. We're going to get ready for week one in college football. Some of you guys out there have been asking me, who is my Heisman pick for this season? I might have hinted at it a little bit in that podcast, but I will have my official Heisman pick, my college football playoff picks, and all that stuff a little bit later before week one gets kicked off. Gambling bets, all that good stuff coming up. Gambling bets, of course, gambling bets. That's redundant. I don't know why I said that. That tells me it's time to wrap this thing up. College Football Country, thanks for listening. We'll be back in just a few days. Get you ready. Football's almost here.